OTC is go.
Pegasus is go.
PTC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen from the National Patriot and Diane Sorey from the Patriot Factor. It's the Tuesday night edition of the show, 4th of October already. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you today?
You know what? I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Yeah, it's a nice day. We had a little bit of rain. You know, down, about an hour, little over an hour, hour and a half south and east of us, they've had a massive wildfire down there in central Nebraska, and it started, somebody started it. It was human caused, they're saying. It started in the Nebraska National Forest down by Halsey, Nebraska. It started on Sunday. They had to evacuate the town of Halsey. They evacuated several campgrounds. That darn thing has burned over 15,000 acres so far.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No, and I've got some good friends that live down there in that general direction, and they manage a ranch, and from what I've heard, I haven't had a chance to talk to them because they've been way busy. They lost a lot of hay and hay bales and hay fields and stuff like that. They were part of that evacuation. Other friends that live a little bit to the north of that were told to prepare to evacuate. Luckily, they didn't have to, but that fire is still burning. Now, they've gotten it down to 30% contained, but it's still smoldering down there. So,
wow, that's
kind of a bad deal. Yeah.
Well, you know what? In the scope of things, that's not so bad, because down here in Florida, across the whole state, we're kind of dealing with a living hell.
Well, yeah, especially over there on the left coast of Florida.
Yeah, it's very bad. And, you know, even we here on the East Coast, while we did not obviously get what they got, some of us, including me, have family members over there.
Well, and you know, a lot of people have moved to Florida over the years. I know people that live down there in that area that did get hit.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and boy, it's a bad deal. And folks, we're thinking about all those people, not only in Florida, but up to the north too, that got hit with torrential rains and flooding and all sorts of things, but Florida got hit the hardest. And,
there's not even any comparison whatsoever what happened on the West Coast.
No, but I mean, a lot of people, you know, in other states all the way up to South Carolina had to deal with some of the fallout from that. But I'll tell you what, those folks down in Florida, well, that's a hardy bunch down there in Florida. And, you know, you've got a reasonably good governor.
Reasonably
he's good.
The best in the entire country.
Yeah, that's why I say he's reasonably good. And I'll bet you know, he's going to, you know, mobilize the troops, so to speak, and get things started. I'm sure he's already started, but I mean, I'm willing to bet that the cleanup and rehabilitation down there takes way, way less time than it did in New Orleans after Katrina.
Oh, well, of course it will, because our whole infrastructure is better. The governor is, you know, there's no comparison. Heavy-duty cleanup will probably be done faster than most people expect, but there's nothing left. Once it's cleaned up, it's a matter of totally rebuilding. And today they were talking about Sanibel, one of my favorite places, being totally decimated, and it might not even be able to rebuild. But I think in a decade or so, people are going to be surprised.
Well, the first thing they got to do down there at Sanibel is rebuild the road that goes out to that island.
Right. There's only one causeway going in and out. And that's what's so nice about Sanibel, because they can shut it down if need be. But what happened, unfortunately, and we won't get into this because I'm doing a whole article on this, but Sanibel was looted after the storm. And the National Guard came in, got everybody out, got the looters out. The whole island is basically deserted except for the National Guard, because there's no power or water going to the island.
Right.
And Sanibel also includes Captiva. So, I mean, it's totally decimated.
Yeah.
I see pictures of it to places we always go to, and they're gone.
Yeah. Well, you know, give them time. And, you know, like I said, DeSantis is going to get things moving down there so fast, it's going to make people's heads spin. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. And
yeah,
that goes with or without help from Uncle Joe.
You know, and we were planning on talking about some of that last Friday. And then I had a power outage and poof, off we went. We thought if anybody was going to have power problems, it was going to be Diane.
Right. Because the storm was on its way here. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it wasn't. It was me.
No.
So,
well,
you know,
okay,
stuff
you know
happens. It's live radio.
Things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's nothing we can do about it. But we've got a heck of a show planned for you tonight. Diane, you're talking about Putin's failing war of attrition.
Yes. And at the end of that, I got a little something to say. And Craig, I think you know what it is.
I know exactly what it concerns. And folks, you don't want to miss it, because Diane's going to go off.
Yeah.
I'm talking about climate change, volcanoes, and liberal virgins.
Okay, great title.
Be prepared for a little snark when we get to that point in the show. We've got quick hitters, too, and let's start with the U.S. job openings report. Job openings fell. Now, that's the headline. Job openings fell. Actually, they plunged. There was over 1 million fewer job openings last month than there was the month before.
Not only the month before, it was the lowest since 2021.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a disgrace.
Well, and the Fed is keeping a tight eye on this thing because, you know, the Fed's trying to adjust interest rates. And by adjust, they mean hike them up. And what they're saying now, Diane, is that this job market, even though it came in over a million shy of what they thought it was going to come in, the jobs market is still too tight, and so the Fed's probably still going to hike the interest rate.
Oh, of course. They love hiking the interest rates. But let me tell you something. From the hurricane and the fact that Southwest Florida is going to need rebuilding, there's going to be massive need for construction workers, electricians, plumbers, welders, all sorts of things, bricklayers, you name it.
Yeah, the
so
trades.
There's going to be an influx of jobs needed in Florida. That will help the job numbers to some degree. Whether or not it does anything to the inflation, who knows?
Well, it'll help job numbers, but it won't really help job opening. Well, it kind of helps job openings, but the problem is, with more job openings, that means inflation will continue to rise.
Of course.
And that's not good if you're a liberal heading into a midterm a month away.
Oh, well, isn't that too bad? You notice I have the little finger violin playing.
Yeah, the world's smallest violin.
Right.
This is a weird thing, folks. For the to curb inflation, our economy has to stink out loud.
Mm-hmm.
And to get the economy to stink out loud, they got to keep jacking up the interest rates. The Fed does. And they're saying just because we're a million short on job openings, that isn't enough. So the Fed's going to do it to us again. Probably another 75-point bump.
Well, they're predicting that this Friday, the September job numbers will be announced. And they're expecting it to show 250,000 workers, new workers being employed. However, in August, it was 315,000. I'm sorry, in July, it was 315,000. But they're expecting the unemployment rate to hold steady at 3.7%. Although I don't really see how that's possible if we're losing that many new jobs being created.
I know. It's hard to make heads or tails out of these numbers. But what we do know is you can't really go by the unemployment figures, because the unemployment figures only count people who are actively looking for a job.
Right.
And what we're seeing in this country is more and more people leaving their jobs and not looking for work.
And also a little confusing is some people are working two and three jobs.
Right, and they're part-time jobs, they're not full-time jobs, and so, yeah, the numbers are all messed up, but, you know, we're going to keep an eye on that. Friday, we will have some idea, by the time we get on the air, what those jobs numbers look like, the unemployment numbers look like. It's going to be interesting to see where those come in and how the Fed reacts to that, but of course, it's not only the Fed that reacts to things like that, it's also Wall Street.
Oh, absolutely. And let me tell you, we who invest in the stock market, we're getting our butts kicked. Remember, Trump went from about 23,000 and brought it all the way up to 35,000. But Biden in his year and a half has knocked us back to under 30. Today, it did cross over into 30. But, you know, for people to recover what they lost is going to take until it reaches 35,000.
Right.
And that's not going to happen anytime soon.
And that's the break-even point. That's where you pick up what you lost. So,
exactly.
You know, keep an eye on the stock market. Keep an eye on the Fed. That's what we're doing. And we'll let you know how it looks on Friday. Let's go from there to Idaho, home of the potato. Apparently, trans inmates that want sex change operations.
Yeah, this is actually a crime. This should not be allowed. A federal judge ordered Idaho's prison healthcare provider to pay more than $2.5 million in legal fees to a biological male who wants to become a female who received gender affirmation surgery while in prison. In other words, $2.5 million went to pay for an incarcerated criminal to play act as a woman.
Now, this guy was paroled last year, so he's back out on the streets.
But now he is. Yeah. Not when the suit took place, right?
Yeah, right. He filed the suit back in 2016 or 17.
17.
Yeah. And, you know, they said, okay, well, you know, we'll do this. The state of Idaho appealed and lost the appeal. So now the state of Idaho has to pony up $2.5 million for this guy getting a clip job. And, you know, and what happens if this guy reoffends?
Well, first, let's talk about the offense, why he was in jail. Okay, he claimed that his Eighth Amendment rights against cruel and unusual punishment were violated after being denied the surgery because he identified as a female but was, because he still had all his male parts, was housed in a man's prison facility. Now, guess what he was in prison for?
Yeah, this will get you. Go ahead.
He was serving a 10-year sentence for sexually abusing a 15-year-old boy.
So the guy's a pedophile.
He's a pedophile. He's using this transgender BS as a way to avoid the pedophilia label, basically.
Well, he's not going to be able to avoid that because that's going to follow him. He's got to be on the sex offender registry, no matter what he pretends to be. But if he goes back...
But he'll
back
be under it under a new name. It won't be under the name he was arrested under.
That's immaterial. He's still going to have to, I would think anyway, register as a sex offender. But I was going to say, if he goes back, if he reoffends and winds up back in prison, he'll be in a women's prison. Now, the reason that's significant is because men in a male prison, if they're convicted of pedophilia, they don't fare very well.
No, they don't. And that could very well be the whole line of thinking with this guy. You know, guys, you got to remember, you can cut off, you can add, you can mess with the insides a bit, but until your DNA is changed, which cannot be done, you are the sex you were born as.
Yep, your DNA is what it is.
Yeah, and if he goes to a woman's prison, if he does offend again, and most pedophiles usually do, he's not going to fare that well over there either.
You wonder how that's going to work out, you know. But yeah. Now the gist of this whole story is that Idaho tried to do the right thing. They tried to say no, we don't have to pay for this. But judge said yes, you do, and now they got to pony up $2.5 million taxpayer dollars to pay for this guy's snip job.
But what I don't understand, well, it's actually to pay the cost of any legals that went on here, fees and et cetera. He got his surgery.
Right.
So why is Idaho paying for anything?
Well, because apparently he got the surgery on his nickel or somebody else's, but it wasn't the taxpayer nickel. Oh. Now he's going to get, you know, refund, you know, the remittance for it.
That's pure crap.
I agree. I don't understand this ruling at all.
Yeah.
You know, and well, they say he's got a major case of gender dysphoria. Well, that means he's got a major case of make-believe.
Of make-believe. And in April, a federal court ordered the Federal Bureau of Prisons to secure gender-affirming surgery for anyone who claims they're a transgender prisoner. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Holy cow. Well, we're going to see a wave of that. You know, I mean, how many guys in prison actually want to be in a women's prison? Most of them.
Most of them, yeah. Oh, yes, we identify, but don't cut our thing off.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I read a story, it's probably a week or two ago, that some prisoner who said he identified as a woman was put in a women's prison, and he raped some women prisoners.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, what do you expect? That's the thing. What do you expect to happen?
The only thing that's going to change this is if we take back the House, take back the Senate, and take back the presidency. All of this crap could be EO'd, legislated out. This whole thing can be turned around, and it could be America's, you know, eight-year nightmare or whatever, four-year nightmare. But this nonsense has to go. Craig, I'm sorry. You can no longer identify as a jar of mayonnaise.
But I'm having so much fun.
I know. You're sliding around the bologna, right?
I'm living life as a condiment. Oh, man. Hey, Elon Musk is in the news. You mentioned, we mentioned, the stock market a couple of minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Elon Musk has made the stock price of Twitter go up a huge amount today.
Yeah, because he said that he intends to proceed with his original $54.20 per share offer to acquire Twitter. And that could have had a little bit to do with the stock market in the green today.
Had a lot to do with it because Twitter agreed to it.
Yeah. So something must have happened with that lawsuit on both ends.
Well, here's the way I think it happened. I mean, this lawsuit was going to be heard in the state of Delaware, which, as we know, is bluer than blue, right?
Right.
And I think Elon Musk's attorneys said, look, Elon, buddy, you're not going to win this thing. You know, they're going to rule against you, and, you know, they're going to force you to go into this thing anyway. So why not just bite the bullet and do it now? And he said, yeah, I suppose you're right. And that's kind of the way this happened. But, yeah, Elon Musk today came out and said, yeah, I'm going to go with that original 44-point-something billion-dollar buyout of Twitter. Twitter came back and said, okie dokie, we're in. And I expect this thing's probably going to close pretty quickly.
Yeah. $44 billion to Elon Musk is, you know, chump change. The man is worth, what, 200 and something billion dollars?
Yeah, give or take spare change.
Yeah. But Elon Musk, as far as I am concerned, he is kind of a hero. Screw the Twitter thing. But the fact that he is helping Governor DeSantis reconnect cell service to the West Coast. He is also helping to keep the Iranian protesters online. He's helping to keep Ukraine online with cell service, internet service, and everything. This is really a good, decent man who now leans Republican and conservative.
Well, you know, you gotta look at Starlink as a major factor in all of that, and that's Elon Musk's deal. And right. He's parking Starlink satellites wherever they need them right now. And
well,
they
the
certainly need
Florida,
them in Florida.
The things in Florida for the internet and the phone connections, that's not Starlink. It has to do with these special kind of boxes.
Right.
But he... He also basically said, and this flawed me, even though he's Tesla, electric cars, he said we cannot ever give up fossil fuels.
Well, I mean, think about all those people down there on the west coast of Florida. And folks, when Diane talks about the west coast, she's talking about Florida's west coast, not goofy Fornia. But think of all those people that had electric vehicles down there in that part of Florida, the west coast of Florida. Even if they have a place to put them right now, they don't have electricity to charge them.
Right. Well, here's something very interesting, and Florida's been looking at this. There are electric cars down here. Can't say there aren't. Most of them. A huge percentage of them, they were owned by Democrats, not Republicans.
I would be shocked if it was the other way around, to be honest.
Yeah. They're not going over as big as, you know, the industry would like you to believe. And the ones buying it, when they get shocked how much a battery costs, they go back to their fossil fuel cars. The electric cars, we do not have the battery technology yet to make them really practical.
You know, Hummer came out with an electric Hummer. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I saw a report the other day that if you run that battery all the way down and plug it in at your house to charge it up, it takes 4 days.
Well, here's another thing. The more you charge up the battery, the less it holds the charge.
Yeah, it's a great deal, folks. Run right out and buy them.
Yeah. And the batteries, folks, we're talking $20,000.
Well, and the Hummer itself, cost $87,000. And then if you want to buy the quick charger for your home, you know, the rapid charger deal for it, that runs you about an extra $15,000 to $20,000 just for the charger.
Right. And we're talking charger, you know, instead of taking 4 days, it might take two.
I mean, it's crazy.
It is. It's insanity.
Speaking of insanity, Joe Biden told Al Sharpton that he plans to run again in 2024.
Yeah. You know, his actual words were, "I'm going to do it again." Ugh. And they posed for a photograph with him saying it. Apparently, he held a meeting on September 2nd with leaders from different civil rights organizations to discuss a number of issues, you know, affecting the Black community. And you know what? There should be no Black community. How about just American community?
Well, that's
by
kind of the way Trump saw
labels,
it.
Yeah, by putting these labels on things, you're making the divide even worse.
Well, but see, the Democrats, those liberals, they have to have it divided. Okay,
of
because they can't have peace and unity and everybody getting along and singing kumbaya. That would ruin their entire agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. But, you know, Craig, I just noticed something. You know, the article that we pulled this research from, Town Hall, even they still don't get it. Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, they identify them as both being Black. They're both mixed.
Yeah, they're both mixed. But, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what your DNA says. If your DNA says you're a man, you can be a woman.
That's true.
It doesn't matter.
If you have 1 millimeter of Black blood in you, you can identify as Black. Give me a break.
Well, but, I mean, that's the way it's always been. You know, I mean, what they're basing it on isn't DNA. They're basing it on what a person looks like. And if they have darker skin than somebody with a tan, they're Black. I mean,
Kamala Harris doesn't have dark skin.
I'm not saying she's black, but, you know, I mean, look.
But no town hall of all things calls her Black.
Well,
we've got problems when our own conservative sites don't get it right.
I understand. I'm right with you. But, I mean, you got to understand that if the person looks like they might be Black, they're Black. I mean, that's the way, you know, society is. So it's not correct. It's not accurate. But it's what they call them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, Rachel Dolezal said she was Black.
Oh, well, she was white just pretending to be Black. But here's something interesting about Biden and the Sharpton meeting. You know, Biden, he might want a second term. Unfortunately, 72% of Americans, including a major percentage of Democrats, do not want him running again or Kamala running in his place.
No, they don't want either one. They've had it. They've had it with them.
Right.
And who can blame them, you know? They want Gavin Newsom. They want Gavin Newsom.
Well, that's going, you know, from idiocy to moronicville.
I agree. You know, but these are liberals we're talking about. This is the path they choose.
Well, did you hear his latest thing in California? He wants to allow the abortion, use your air quotes here, abortion of babies up to a year old after birth.
I know. I'm not saying the guy's a rocket scientist. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying liberals want him. You know? And God only knows why. I certainly can't answer the question. He's destroying the state of California, so.
Yeah, that's true.
It is what it is. Folks, we got to move along. It's the bottom of the hour. That means we have to take a quick break. About 30 minutes from now, I'm talking about climate change, volcanoes, and liberal virgins. But when we come back from this bottom of the hour break and a couple of station IDs, Diane's talking about Putin's failing war of attrition. So stay with us. There's plenty more Right Side Patriots after this. You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's long-time Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen from the National Patriot, and Diane Sorey right over there. I can see her from here at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night, and if you miss any part of the show, just go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, this show, and all the rest will be right there waiting for you.
Yep.
Yeah, we love our pod people too, by the way. Thank you, guys.
Yes.
All right, so there's this little skirmish that's been going on for 8 months over in Ukraine. It's hard to believe this thing has been going on for 8 months already. It's a war that Putin should have won in about 2 months, but what he didn't count on was the tenacity of the people of Ukraine. And you've taken that on with Putin's failing war of attrition.
Yes. And let's start with this quote. We will fight and we will not surrender. It's very important that we won't force other countries, United States of America and Europe, to suffer. Now we suffer. We fight and we give our lives for the future of democracy and of the open world. Those were the words of Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky. Now, Vladimir Putin is on a roll of sorts, but not in the way he ever envisioned, for he must now face the fact that he is losing in Ukraine and doing so on three fronts. Militarily in Ukraine itself, what with Zelensky's forces recently dealing Russia's air force some major blows, in the court of public opinion as nations continue to condemn his actions, and most importantly at home in Mother Russia, for now his own people are turning against him regarding a fight they never wanted or considered to be theirs. Why so? In a recent interview on NPR, Natalia Zarina, a retired university professor, summed it up pretty well in stating that, quote, "I haven't heard the word war out of Putin's mouth. And if there's no war, then how can we have a mobilization? end quote. Now, this was in regards to Putin having issued a special referendum pertaining to the mobilization of what he alone calls reservists, simply 300,000 men of fighting age. Saying that men with military experience between the ages of 18 and 60 will be called up, trained, and then sent to fight, and most probably die in Ukraine, the word war itself was not part of his official discourse. So if there is no actual declaration of war, then why then the mobilization? And here is where the court of public opinion comes into play, not just for Vladimir Putin himself, but for Mother Russia as well. And it's thanks to his actions ordered out of desperation and a sense of maniacal self-gratification. Actions taken after United Nations investigators showed the Council on Human Rights concrete evidence that Putin's forces had indeed committed both atrocities and war crimes in Ukraine. Crimes once rumored, now proven to be fact. Crimes discovered in, but not limited to, the areas of Kiev, Chernihiv, Kharkiv, and Sumy, areas recaptured by Ukrainian forces. Exposed that not only were captured Ukrainian soldiers tortured, but that cluster munitions were unleashed on civilian areas where there were no military personnel present nor military infrastructure found. Photo and video evidence released showed not only proof of mass executions and mass graves, but of civilians being tortured and horrific sexual violence being committed even upon young children. Craig, atrocities uncovered and exposed at around the same time that Vladimir Putin announced that for him, the nuclear option is indeed still on the table if Ukraine or NATO dare to threaten Russia's territorial integrity.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, and I think you're going to get into this, what the definition of territorial integrity is for Vladimir Putin, but when he says things like that, when he puts those nukes on the table and says, hey, this is an option, how does President Zelensky view that? I mean, is he brushing that aside or is he not brushing it aside?
Well, things have changed a little bit because Zelensky's response to Putin's threat echoes the sentiments of many in that he does not believe that Putin is bluffing, saying, quote, maybe yesterday it was a bluff, now it could be a reality. He wants to scare the whole world. These are the first steps of his nuclear blackmail. I don't think he's bluffing. I think the world is deterring it and containing this threat. We need to keep putting pressure on him and not allow him to continue, end quote, to which I most surely agree. But the question that must be answered is, what does Putin consider to now be Russian territorial integrity? Simply, these are the areas he hoped to annex into the Russian Federation, areas courtesy of Kremlin-held regions in eastern and southern Ukraine. And these what are four only partially controlled regions, as in Luhansk and Donetsk, Russian is very hard to pronounce, two Russian-backed breakaway republics, as well as Zaporizhia and Kherson, regions which comprise some of Ukraine's key agricultural and industrial centers, were recently forced to vote in an election that Putin knew was illegal under both Ukrainian and international law, an election whose outcome was predetermined so as to help Vladimir Putin not only save some semblance of face, but to try to give the appearance of legitimacy to something even he knows has no legal standing. But if saving face helps Putin justify his Russian integrity sham, then he, in his mind, can justify that any military move Zelensky's forces might take being an attack on Russia herself, no matter that Ukraine has the legal right to defend its designated territory. And now seen by many to be but a rat trapped in the proverbial corner, Vladimir Putin, like others trapped before him, has now raised the stakes by playing not just a game of winner-take-all, but by using the very threat of Armageddon, nuclear Armageddon, as a way of turning failures into a victory of sorts, with the rest of the world be damned. And with Ukraine being Putin's first, but surely not his only target, the nations belonging to NATO have much to fear as well. What many analysts now believe is that Vladimir Putin would likely use tactical, as in battlefield, nuclear bombs, bombs ranging from 0.3 kilotons to 100 kilotons of what's called explosive power, as opposed to the 1.2 megatons of a U.S. strategic warhead or the 58 megaton bombs Russia tested back in 1961. But why would Putin not use the big bombs? Why would he favor using tactical nukes alone? Simply because said bombs are designed to have a limited impact on the battlefield compared to other strategic nuclear weapons, which are designed to win all-out wars, wars resulting in massive amounts of collateral damage. Craig, and that's the very thing Putin refuses to allude to in his now issued mobilization referendum.
Well, obviously, Putin can't win a war flat out, not a conventional war. And I think he sees that, which is probably why he's putting the nukes back on the table. But what does this say about the mind of Vladimir Putin? Or maybe not the mind, but the psyche. I mean, if you're looking at this guy, what is he exactly? Is he kind of a mix of several different things?
Yeah. Vladimir Putin is indeed an ego-driven megalomaniac. He is not a madman, though, in the classical sense, nor is he driven by suicidal tendencies like other madmen before him. And why? Because what Putin craves is tangible battlefield victories to counter his now faltering invasion of Ukraine, as well as his wanting true superpower status returned to Mother Russia, with him alone being recognized and lauded as her savior. But like most who foolishly envision themselves as both a warrior and a hero, Vladimir Putin remains but a coward who not only uses nuclear blackmail to instill fear in those who were once fearless, but a man who would gladly sacrifice innocence in an attempt to snatch some modicum of victory out of what in the end will surely be his and Russia's defeat. So while Vladimir Putin called for what he still refers to as a partial mobilization of 300,000 new troops, and did so right before the sham of annexation election took place, the fact remains that Putin has not clearly thought through his mobilization objective. For even if said number was reached, he has no way of getting those troops, meaning men who just days ago were but civilians with no animosity towards Ukraine, getting them the training and weapons needed to fight against Zelensky's forces. And why? Because not only is Putin's war chest now being stretched thin, what with imposed sanctions on Russia taking a toll, but tactical errors have been made that will directly affect new troops from getting to the front lines, the very lines where obviously they need to be the most. And besides, an army of those not wanting to fight is paramount to being no army at all. So, as I was writing this, and as Russian authorities continued to claim, read lie here, that the mobilization only affects Russians with previous military experience, protests remain ongoing in many cities across Russia, including in major cities like Moscow and St. Petersburg. And these protests have turned violent more times than not, with over 2,350 plus arrests being made to date, despite a heavy police presence and threats of arrests, arrests replete with a 10-year imprisonment if so deemed. In fact, we now find Russian activist groups and Ukrainian officials rightfully claiming that in certain ethnic minority regions of Russia, like in the Dagestan region, young minority men are being, quote, disproportionately targeted and forced to enlist. And if they don't do so, they are immediately arrested and left to face whatever consequences of the order of the day. And not only are protests growing in number, but others of military age, others to a tune of now 220,000 plus, are so fed up with not only Putin's invasion of Ukraine, but with his escalating threats and loss of what little freedoms they had. So fed up that no matter the long lines of traffic at border crossings, no matter skyrocketing airfare prices and sold-out flights, those of military age continue to flee Russia to not only escape mobilization, but, Craig, to escape a man who now sees them as but sacrificial lambs who must be willing to give both life and limb in his quest to return Mother Russia to her former imperialistic state.
So here's a question for you. You know, there was a time when, let's say, a Russian dictator could get away with this kind of thing. Because news traveled slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Is that time gone now?
Not at all. Remember, folks, we have the internet now. But Putin's Russia, in the end, will not survive. Because when actions taken reek solely of self-servitude, they do tend to come back to haunt. And when a man tries to justify what are unjustifiable actions, actions Putin still sees as but vindication for his still-called special military operation, said actions do anything but instill the much-needed, much-wanted united support for illegalities knowingly taken. And these illegalities include not just proven war crimes and atrocities committed, but Putin's sham of an annexation election, an election that Russian-backed officials claimed had overwhelming popular support, no matter being condemned by both the UN and the EU, a said election in no way met internationally recognized standards for free and fair elections. But for Vladimir Putin, verbal condemnation means not even a slap on the wrist. For just this past Friday, in a speech at the Kremlin, he announced to Russian parliament that he had begun the formal annexing of parts of Donetsk, Kherson, Luhansk, and Zaporizhia regions, similar in scope to his annexation of Crimea in 2014. And with Russia's two houses of parliament set to ratify the annexation so-called treaties this upcoming week, said annexation, as per Putin, will not only turn millions of people into Russian citizens, but will see areas that comprise roughly 18%, nearly one-fifth of Ukrainian territory, forever becoming part of Russia. And forever led Putin to issue repeated warnings that Moscow will use all available means to defend these territories. Also announced was that agreements had been signed with two Russian-backed separatist leaders, leaders from the east, along with two Russian-appointed officials from the south. Forced attrition, if you will, that now makes it next to impossible for any sort of diplomatic solution between Vladimir Putin and Ukraine's President Zelensky to reach even a modicum of success. In fact, Zelensky responded to said annexation announcement by rightfully saying that, quote, the votes are worthless and do not change reality. The territorial integrity of Ukraine will be restored, and our reaction to recognition of the results by Russia will be very harsh, end quote. While Joe Biden, who cares more about Ukraine's borders than he does about America's own, stated that Putin's actions are, Craig, a flagrant violation of the UN Charter and the basic principles of sovereignty and territorial integrity, end quote, proving yet again that hypocrisy runs deep with this one.
Well, words are one thing and words are cheap. I mean, Biden can get up there and spew whatever nonsense he wants to spew, but, you know, there are some official recognitions that he could make happen, but will he?
Well, while Zelensky continues to hope that Biden and his administration will officially recognize Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism, something that would help bolster Zelensky's position and his now and future responses to Putin's illegal actions, know that no such recognizing will come to fruition. What with Biden having recently stated that to do so would cause, quote, unintended consequences, end quote, to Ukraine and the world, as if Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine hasn't already done just that. So as Vladimir Putin continues to see victory through annexation being the foundation, not just for more assaults on Ukraine, but that his threats of nuclear Armageddon will help keep the world at bay via confusion and manipulation, which at times does tend to drive a wedge between even those once aligned against a common enemy. But now we must wait to see how this all plays out, especially since Ukrainian flags are flying once again over the strategic town of Lyman, proudly flying after Putin was forced to withdraw his troops from the very town in the Donetsk region that he had just annexed, a move seen by many as a significant and humiliating setback for Putin's campaign in the East. And now Ukraine rightfully fights on, for Zelensky knows something that Putin obviously does not, and that is that history itself has shown that a war of attrition really never ends in victory for those who engage in an unjust fight. Case closed.
You know, actually, Putin had his troops pull out of Lyman so quickly, they left the bodies of their comrades there. They fled Lyman, the Russians did, so fast that they didn't even take the bodies of their fallen comrades. I mean, that's pretty stunning.
Yes. Well, what happened was Ukrainian forces actually surrounded the city. There was really no way out for them except a forced pullout.
Yeah, cut and run.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did.
It's an interesting thing to watch unfold. I mean, I wish the world didn't have to watch this because, you know, the people of Ukraine, they didn't do anything to deserve this, and neither did Zelensky, you know. This is just an abhorrent situation, all of Putin's doing. Now, Diane, you published this op-ed under the name Putin's Failing War of Attrition. You posted it all over the place, Facebook, several other places, and MeWe. Now, yes. What happened when you posted this particular op-ed on MeWe, a place, by the way, where you get a fair amount of positive support?
Absolutely. It seems every article that I and other people have posted gets comments of the most vile, disgusting sexual nature in support of Vladimir Putin.
How bizarre is that?
Yeah. Full support for what he's doing. They say Zelensky is a crook and all sorts of horrible things that I'm not going to repeat on air. These people, they are conspiratorists, and I do believe, because the amount of them on MeWe, I think MeWe has actually been infiltrated, to use, you know, that term, with some Russian spies, trolls, whatever you want to call them. Because the comments being made are not something or in the way that we speak.
Well, and, you know, these are by and large people that do not weigh in on anything else you post. But if you post something that exposes the truth about Vladimir Putin in this war, they come out of the woodwork like cockroaches in the dark.
Oh, it's really unbelievable. But yesterday, there was one woman, and it's men and women, there was one woman that was so vile and in a specific sexual context, I had to block, ban her, and report her.
Wow.
And I have never done that. But it was so vile. And you know, Craig, with what we do, we can take a lot.
Well, yeah. And, you know, folks, Diane was reading me some of these comments this morning, and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is what MeWe is allowing up. And that's, to me, bothers me more than anything, because as much as we know how bad Facebook is, and, you know, nobody, I'm not sticking up for Facebook here, folks, by any means. I'm a 48-time, you know, Facebook felon here. But the only community standard I agree with is anything of a sexual nature, because that crosses a line into many different areas, you know.
Well, and this was, I mean, completely uncalled for. I mean, this kind of crap. I don't know what's going on over there.
Agree with me with facts, but don't agree with me. Don't disagree with me with the most vile, vulgar, anti everything you can think of. Anti-Semitic remarks, anti-remarks about gay people, anti-remarks about women. I mean, across the board vileness. MeWe needs to look a bit about what some people are posting on their site. Because if it continues, I'm not the only one that's going to pick up on this. Other people are going to pick up on it.
Well, but you know, you can't stand around and yell free speech all day and then say, well, but they shouldn't be allowed to say that. You know, I mean, the thing to do when those people, when those cockroaches come out of the woodwork, you know, as they did on this op-ed, you simply, as you see those comments, block them and ban them. You know,
well,
I mean, just get rid of them. Knock them off your list.
Let's put it this way. Yesterday, there were so many of them, I would have spent a half a day blocking and banning people. Yeah. MeWe is not worth my time for that.
Well, you know, I mean, you got
to... Free speech is okay. People can disagree with me all they want. They can call me certain names, whatever they want to do. But there comes a point where you do cross a line of vulgarities.
I understand.
And it becomes pure hate speech.
Well, that's true. You know, but even that supposedly is protected by the First Amendment. But, you know, it's one of those things. These people are idiots, okay? They don't know what's really going on over there. And most of them are conspiracy theorists. So right. They're going to latch on to the goofiest conspiracies they can find. And, you know, by God, they're going to try and get their point away, even in the most vile way possible, which proves that they're morons. They're not looking at this the way educated people are looking at this. They're right. Fools.
Right. Well, here's something very interesting about our First Amendment right to free speech. Yes, we do have a First Amendment right to free speech. However, we don't have a right to speech that incites violence or physical harm against somebody. And I got that, too, on these comments, folks. And it also does not say anything about hate speech put into writing.
Well, you know, it is what it is. But I'll tell you what, you know, Putin's the bad guy here.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're a conspiracy theorist with your head firmly up your keister, Putin's the bad guy.
Right.
It's just that simple.
No question about it.
Folks, you can find Diane's op-ed in two places. You can go to her blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or you can go to rspradio1.com. Either way, you can find a link to the article. Now, what you need to do is read the article for yourself. You need to share the link that you find at either one of those two places and share it everywhere you can. You know, Putin's failing war of attrition is going to come and bite him in the backside. And I'm thinking, you know, like you said, he's kind of a rat trapped in a corner. This guy's getting desperate. If he's going to do something really, really butt stupid, he's going to do it probably within the next 2 to 3 months.
I think it'll be sooner than that, because today, before we went on air, it was announced that Ukraine has recaptured more cities in these areas. And he can snap. I hate to say this. Well, I don't hate to say it. I mean, Putin's own people, his own military, needs to turn against him.
And I think eventually they will. But in the meantime, folks, look out for a missing nuclear Russian submarine.
Yes.
That thing has got some armament on it that could cause a lot of problems. So keep that in mind. But now,
right, it's floating around.
It's somewhere. Nobody's really sure where. We've hit the top of the hour. That means we got to take another break. One segment to go. And when we come back, I'm talking about climate change, volcanoes, and liberal virgins. Stay with us. There's plenty more on Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sori from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot and Diane Sori at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night. It's the 4th of October, and if you miss any part of this show, just go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning. You can find it there if you click the podcast button, right, Diane?
Yes, you can.
All righty. All right, so final segment of the show tonight. We're talking climate change, volcanoes, and liberal virgins. Now, according to Nina Turner, a senior fellow at the Progressive Think Tank Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy, obviously a place full of meteorologists and experts on the weather, Hurricane Ian is a textbook example of climate change impacting people. Climate change is not political, it's reality, unquote. Well, it's a political reality, but I'm not sure this fellow, Nina, was leaning in that direction. That said, please do show us the textbook in which she or he refers. We'd love to see it, unless it's one of those new woke textbooks, which are, in reality, propaganda leaflets. The fact regarding Ian and other hurricanes is that there is no scientific evidence that they are in any way driven by human-caused climate change. Naturally, I don't think liberals will believe me, as I am not an expert in the field of weather. But at the same time, they won't believe the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and they are experts in the field of weather. NOAA has done a study, which is what one does when one wants science-based evidence, and they found that their models and analysis, quote, didn't support the notion that greenhouse gas-induced warming leads to large increases in either tropical storms or overall hurricane numbers in the Atlantic, unquote. In fact, NOAA says it is premature to conclude with high confidence that human-caused increase greenhouse gases have had any impact on hurricane activity in the Atlantic. Then, Diane, there's Steve Malloy. He's a senior legal fellow at the Energy and Environment Legal Institute, a place full of people who know far more about the environment than anyone over at the Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy does. And Malloy says, and I quote, there were about 16 major hurricanes between 1916 and 1965, but only six since 1965. So, clearly, major hurricanes happen with lower levels of carbon dioxide, unquote.
Simply, hurricanes have been happening since the Earth first formed and will continue to happen until the Earth is no more, which is in a couple of billion years from now. So all of this is just nonsense. These are weather cycles. The water gets warmer. The air masses come together and they form a perfect storm, if you will, a hurricane. But what's funny is I do like how you said there were more major hurricanes before the invention of a certain something.
Well, I mean, look, you know, between 1905 and 1965, there were more hurricanes with lower carbon dioxide levels. Now, that's what Steve Malloy says. Now, look, here's what that means, although I'm pretty sure it's not what Mr. Malloy was drawing his conclusion from. But since there were more major hurricanes before the invention of SUVs than there have been after the invention of SUVs, maybe the way to bring about an end to hurricanes would be to produce more SUVs and raising the level of CO2 in our atmosphere. I know that's silly, but it's not as but stupid as what Senator Amy Klobuchar, a liberal moron from Minnesota, said a week or so ago when she uttered, quote, we just did something about climate change for the first time in decades. That's why we've got to win this as the hurricane bears down on Florida. The senator added, we've got to win the midterms. Now, Klobuchar, who, as a member of the Senate and a liberal, knows plenty about hot air, but nothing regarding the weather, and she was trying to suggest that hurricanes could be stopped in their tracks by voting for more liberals, because liberals have every intention of throwing more American taxpayer dollars at the weather so as to make the weather different. And by the way, a weather tax is nothing new. Let me explain that. Roughly 165 million years ago, a giant SUV full of hairspray struck the Earth, and the resulting change in the global climate brought about by dust and smoke in the air for decades wiped out the dinosaurs. Now, those dinosaurs enjoying the beach at the point of impact were squashed, while a good deal of them in the north and south parts of America were incinerated instantly. But the rest of them around the world died as a result of the weather. It would be remiss of me not to at least mention that at the time, people had not yet been invented. Now, people showed up roughly a few million years ago, and humans were finally invented about 200,000 years ago, give or take a few weeks. Now, over time, humans began to form societies and ask questions like, why is the sky blue? Where does rain come from? And how come it's so damn hot? Now, those early human societies didn't know any more about the weather than do the fellows at the Progressive Think Tank Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy. But that didn't stop them from assigning the control of the weather to a series of various gods. Diane, if it rained, one god did it. If it was hot, another god did that. If it were rough seas, big storms, droughts, or floods, gods, and more gods were responsible. Eventually, people started praying to those gods in order to get the weather they desired.
Well, in order to get the weather they desired, something had to be invented in order for them to be able to get what they desired.
Right. That's when weather taxes were invented. Now, if those ancient people failed to get the weather they were praying for, they started throwing things of value at their gods based on some idea that their gods weren't going to be happy until people gave them stuff. In fact, in some societies, money wasn't enough. So they started in on human sacrifices to appease the weather gods. To that end, if they wanted rain and there was a volcano handy, they'd toss in a virgin. Wait. And repeat as often as necessary until it rained. Eventually, most societies settled on just having one god. Now, that practice started in ancient Egypt, although the ancient Egyptians didn't really go for it. On the other hand, the ancient Jews did like the change, and it kind of spread from there. But paying a tax at church was soon invented after that. Sure. You know, when the plate comes around today, it's a voluntary tax. But nobody wants to look like they're dodging their God tax, so everybody puts a little something in just to be safe. Today, they tell you it's so that the church can afford to pay the preacher, keep the lights on, and make it comfortable enough inside, not too hot and not too cold, so that folks can take a short nap on Sunday mornings. But when was the last time you saw it rain inside of a church? And if it did, they'd ask you to pay more God tax to patch the roof and keep that from happening again. Liberals don't like church or religion very much, but Diane, they sure do like collecting taxes. And they want you to believe that you aren't paying enough weather taxes to stop hurricanes.
Well, it's very interesting that the weather taxes have actually turned into a religion of sorts.
Well, they have. The religion of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we're talking about the liberals, they want you to believe that only if they throw your tax dollars at the weather will change. And the reason they want more and more of your tax dollars is because they can't find a single virgin, liberal virgin, to toss into a volcano. So, why are so many liberals elected, like Klobuchar, or propagandists like those in the mainstream media, going bat crap crazy with the climate change panic right now? It's really for a very good reason, or several reasons. First, they're just a month or so away from an election in which they stand to lose their power to extract from you more and more tax dollars to throw at the religion of climate change. Second, it had been a pretty damn quiet year until Hurricane Ian showed up, and according to James Taylor, that's the one who's the president of the conservative think tank Heartland Institute, and not the one who's seen fire and rain, quote, these types of hurricanes existed before SUVs and coal-fired power plants were invented. In fact, they were much more frequent and more severe before coal power plants and SUVs, unquote. In fact, there have been fewer hurricanes this year than in previous years. And third, since Ian ripped through Florida, it's disrupted flights of illegal aliens to Martha's Vineyard. And liberals needed something to bitch about. Pam Keith, a former Democratic Senate candidate and founder of the left-wing firm Center for Employment Justice, obviously another expert on the weather, issued a tweet last week saying, quote, Ian is a climate change hurricane, unquote. Representative Raja Krishnamoorthy, a Democrat out of Illinois, tweeted last Thursday, quote, the rapid storm intensification we're seeing with Hurricane Ian will become more common and more dangerous as the climate changes, unquote. NPR said in an op-ed last week, quote, storms like Ian are more likely because of human-caused climate change, unquote. Here's how the weather and scientific experts at NPR explain it. Quote, heat is the fuel that makes hurricanes big, powerful, and rainy. As humans burn fossil fuels and release huge amounts of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, the amount of heat trapped on Earth rises steadily. The air gets hotter, and the ocean water gets hotter. And when a baby hurricane formed, as it moved over very hot water in the Caribbean and Gulf of Mexico, it grew very rapidly. Now, Diane, according to NPR, little baby Ian moved over very hot water and grew into a monster. That's the propaganda liberals want you to believe, but here's the truth. The average global sea surface temperature has increased about 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit since 1901. That's an average rate of 0.13 degrees Fahrenheit per decade.
Yeah, well, what's very interesting is that number alone, when you take all the snark and put it aside, actually proves that there were more hurricanes back then than there are now.
Well, let's do just that. How about it? Well, we'll take away the snark for just a couple of minutes here. The average temperature in the Gulf of Mexico in September is between 83 and 86 degrees Fahrenheit. That temperature has increased by 1.5 degrees since 1901. That means that between 1901 and 1965, when there were more major hurricanes than there are now, the water temperature in the Gulf of Mexico was lower, at an average of between 81.5 and 84.5 degrees Fahrenheit. When NPR uses a term like very hot water, it is subjective at best. Generally, water is considered hot at between 120 and 150 degrees Fahrenheit, which is why most home water heaters are set at 120 degrees. Generally speaking, warm water is considered to be between 90 and 110 degrees Fahrenheit, and given those figures, very hot water would be over 150 degrees Fahrenheit, and yet, according to NPR, very hot reaches all the way down to just 86 degrees. NPR did not even attempt to explain why there were more major hurricanes when the water temperatures were cooler. Now, according to Time magazine, quote, the science is well known that climate change created conditions for Hurricane Ian. But according to Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that's the IPCC, an agency, by the way, within an organization that liberals love, the United Nations, quote, the IPCC sees no correlation between warming temperatures and more hurricanes. And we saw that this year. Up until this hurricane, which is massive, it had been almost historically low numbers of hurricanes, unquote. Now, if that doesn't fly in the face of liberal propaganda like a palm frond in Coral Gables, I don't know what does. Now, here's a little something to chew on. Solar activity runs on an 11-year cycle, with the next high set to occur in or around 2025. Currently, we're in the increasing cycle heading toward the high point. Now, looking back on the strongest hurricanes in our recent history, Diane, I'm talking about Hugo and Andrew in 1989 and 92, Charlie and Katrina in 2004 and 5, Harvey, Irma, and Michael in 2017 and 18, all of those occurred when solar activity was above the low point but increasing toward the high point, and Ian is no exception.
Well, that's actually very true, and I was here for all of those, except, Hugo. I was here in Hugo. But there's a problem with the liberals regarding this, because here it is, you've presented a lot of facts, but the liberals don't do that, do they?
No, they present propaganda, climate change propaganda, because they don't have a single shred of evidence. They're telling a convenient lie to upend the inconvenient truth that what they call climate change is actually just the weather and could well be driven more by solar cycles than by anything else. And no amount of tax dollars stolen from we the people will ever change the weather. However, on the off chance that the liberals and their religion of climate change is correct, I might suggest doing everything possible to find the last remaining liberal virgin and a volcano.
Well, I know a couple of liberal virgins. I don't know if they're virgins, but I know a couple of liberals I'd sure like to throw into that volcano.
Well, I mean, you know, they're out there, and I mean, it's not just Amy Klobuchar. It's all these elected liberals, all these liberals in the mainstream media, and they're all jumping up and down, screaming, yelling, climate change, human caused climate change, caused Ian, you know, and it's just not true. The science goes the opposite direction.
Right. The science, you know, the fact is, we have had less hurricanes in the past few decades. Absolutely have had less. And, you know, you can't argue with that. Yes, we've had some very severe ones, Katrina for one. But a lot of the damage caused, it's not that the hurricane in itself is to blame for everything. But a lot of the building codes are very lax. They kind of play into the damage that a hurricane can cause.
Well, and a lot of those building codes are old codes. I mean, we're talking about buildings, houses, businesses, what have you, that were built before technology caught up. And, you know, anything newer stands a much better chance of weathering the storm, shall we say. You think that's going to change now as they rebuild on the west coast of Florida?
Oh, Governor DeSantis already said any new building is going to be up to the new codes. See, down here, like, I was young when I came down to Florida. That's why I know those other hurricanes. However, once Andrew hit, every house constructed had to be built to the new code.
Right.
Which my house is. It was built to the new code. Then when Wilma hit, and we personally lost the clay tiles from our roof, not all of them, the roof integrity held, but a lot of the clay tiles were blown off to such a degree that they replaced the whole roof. Not only did they do them then to Andrew, post-Andrew codes, they now did them to even a higher code. And the codes have been improved every few years. There was improvements after Michael hit the panhandle. Well, now, when they do rebuild the southwest coast of Florida, it will have the most stringent codes ever.
Well, and of course, that's going to cost people more. It's going to cost insurance companies more, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But, you know, even though there's fewer hurricanes than what we've seen in the past, you don't want to rebuild to a substandard code and then have another one come through. I mean, that would be pointless.
Absolutely. And You know, here on the East Coast, because of Andrew, we are pretty well prepared. Yeah, we can see major catastrophes happening, but thanks to the improvement of the codes made then, it might not be as bad as what the West Coast is going through.
Well, that's true. You know, now, that said, there are some wild conspiracy theories going around about how this Hurricane Ian came to be.
Yeah.
And one of the weirdest ones I heard was that the government was seeding the clouds to build Hurricane Ian into a monster so that it would destroy Florida and hurt Ron DeSantis' chances of winning.
That is totally hogwash, totally BS, whatever you want to call it, because the clouds, per se, the atmosphere, the jet stream moves a hurricane along, but it doesn't cause it. It's the heat in the water is how the hurricane, like you said, builds its strength. Seeding comes from above. It does nothing to affect a hurricane.
I'm not, like I said, I'm not an expert on the weather, okay? And I'm not really an expert on cloud seeding. However, I do know a few things, and common sense should tell you these things. First of all, Ian was a giant thing. You could not seed enough to make a hurricane that big.
Correct.
Hurricanes form out in the ocean. They don't form where they dump. They form and then they move. Now, part of the reason Ian got so big was because it was a very slow moving storm. This thing moved at a snail's pace. The longer it stays over water, the bigger it gets. The slower it moves, the further out it expands.
Right.
Okay, so if you're looking for reasons why Ian got so big, it wasn't because the water was super hot, like NPR says. The water is only 1.5 degrees warmer now than it was 120 years ago.
Yeah, but the media, that doesn't play into the, you know, the whole propaganda.
Right, which is why I felt it necessary to include it in this commentary. Like I said, for that part of the commentary, I left the snark aside.
Right.
You know, because people need to understand that. And when you look at the science that surrounds this, you look at people that deal with the science that surrounds this, they're all saying the same thing. Climate change had nothing to do with this.
Right.
The only people that are saying climate change did it are people that know absolutely zero about the weather.
Oh, of course.
You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. Folks, you can get this commentary under the title of Climate Change, Volcanoes, and Liberal Virgins, if you can find one. You can get it at two places. You can go to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or you can go to rspradio1.com. You'll find the link either place, just like you find the link to Diane's at Diane's blog or on the radio station website. Either way, grab the link and share it everywhere. People need to understand the facts behind Hurricane Ian. And Diane, you're going to delve into some of the other aspects in the aftermath of Ian coming up next week, right?
Right. My article is going to deal with the aftermath and some of the nonsense that is going on, not from the Florida end, but again from the liberal end.
Well, and next week, Tuesday night next, I'm going to deal with the election in Italy.
Ooh, very good one. Okay.
They've elected a new prime minister over there, and the liberals are beside themselves.
Yes. Trump in a dress, folks.
Yep. And they're coming unglued, and I love it. And I'm going to tell you what you need to know about her.
That's a good title. Trump in a dress.
Trump in a dress. Now, well, it's not really a snarky article. This is kind of a fact-based article. If I was doing a snark piece, I would do that.
True. That's true.
So that's what I've got coming up next week. Diane's delving into the nonsense and BS surrounding the wake of Hurricane Ian.
The politicalization of a hurricane.
And obviously, we're going to keep an eye on things that are going on this week. You know, the Elon Musk thing, we'll find out how fast that's going to close. So he owns Twitter. We'll keep an eye on what's going on in Ukraine with Putin and all sorts of other stuff, including, and we got just about 35, 40 seconds left here, including, Diane, that little helicopter on Mars has now made 35 flights.
I know. Is that amazing? They never thought it would go that long and that far.
They thought that's they were going to be lucky to get 5 flights out of that little sucker.
Hey, maybe Marvin is coming out at night and winding it back up.
It could be, doing a little maintenance. Well, look, folks, we'll keep an eye on that. We got a launch tomorrow. Astronauts going up to the space station. That's supposed to happen at noon Eastern time. Thank you, Elon Musk and SpaceX and NASA.
Yes.
But with that, Diane, we've come to the end of tonight's show.
Yes, we have. So nighty-night, folks.
Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday. Bye-bye.